feel bad about yourself, because I think everybody to a point is just, even no matter how senior they are, we get lost. Everybody gets lost, mm-hmm. especially with the pandemic. Just reach out. And if you're ever being made like feel bad about reaching out or asking too many questions, just know that this is not the company for you.
You're listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. CG Spectrum College of Digital Art and Animation offers specialized career training for the film and game sector. Join our hosts, Career Development Manager Maxine Schnepp and CGS Mentor Justin Mulman, as they chat with industry experts doing cutting-edge work in film and games. Now, on to the show.
This week, I got to chat with Azra Alkan, who is a compositing supervisor and real-time look development artist, and she's also a real-time mentor at CG Spectrum. Azra is an award-winning Unreal Engine artist applying her talents in the film industry and has worked on titles like Spider-Man Far From Home, Terminator Dark Fate. She has also worked at studios like Luma Pictures, Framestore, and Rhythm and Hues. She was also chosen in 2020 to complete the Unreal Fellowship with Epic Games, where she moved from compositing into real-time look development. We also talked quite a bit about how to value yourself, determining your worth, and also how she learned to network in an authentic way. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you got into the industry. Like, how did you start? Where did you start? You know, and onto the journey now. Start at the beginning.
I think it's kind of a story that gives people hope, because it wasn't a perfect story. And it feels like every time I tell this, if I can do it, everybody can do it. I grew up in Turkey. You know, in Turkey, it's being very Asian country, kind of like close to Europe, but still those Middle Eastern values as well. Arts mm-hmm. is not something that you're taught to make money with after graduating from. And it's generally looked down on, you know. Granted, my whole family are doctors and my mom's a lawyer and she's the outlier, you know. She's like the black sheep for being a lawyer.
Oh my God.
Yeah, my whole family are either doctors or like award-winning scientists. It was really difficult to explain it to, you know, my grandparents what I want to do. And especially when you're younger, in that sense, like over there, the education system is really harsh. You have to make a decision at 15 if you're going to go into math and sciences or literature and math or social studies. And then that basically determines at 17 when you take the SAT type of, you know, test, what categories you can choose, because you can't really, you know, if you're math and science, you can't really go ahead and say, I'm going to do social sciences, because then your points drop. So it's pretty strict. Like, you're supposed to know what you're going to do at 15. And I was, you know, raised to be really good at math and programming and science and all that, physics and chemistry. A part of me really, really enjoyed it, but I was always interested in arts. I would draw, I would watch movies, you know, whatever I can get my hands on it in the, you know, 90s in my childhood and early 2000s and stuff, like theater and whatever was available around me. Mm-hmm. I remember, like, there was this DVD store that would only do, like, fake DVDs, David. This is really bad to admit, but this happens a lot in the Middle East.
No, it was the same in Poland, and honestly, even like Polish communities here in Toronto, like even in Canada, it was still like very common that like all of your, like, you know, parents or like aunts and uncles, I'm trying not to get anyone in trouble, but like would have these bootleg DVDs, right? Especially when DVDs became like the new thing after VHS. I think it was like easier.
Honestly, I didn't even know what was a copy and what was real. And I would just go in there and buy a bunch of, you know, DVDs, and I had this whole set of Stanley Kubrick, and that was original. And Stanley Kubrick kind of got me interested in films, because I just was really impressed by how much, you know, symbolism he puts in whatever he shoots. Nothing is random. And like, if there's an ashtray there, it has a meaning. So it was just like so intentional that watching all of his like collection got me into thinking this is a way to storytell. But, you know, there's also no female filmmakers at the time in Turkey, barely any right now. And most of the time, if you're a woman, you would get into arts, like just being a model or an actress, not necessarily like just doing the art part and like being appreciated for your talent. So I decided, you know, because of that, I'm just going to go into, I was good at one thing and that could still get me into some sort of arts or drawing. I just didn't know what to do, but I figured if I go into computer sciences, then I can still be in a respectable area and explore some art with it.
You're close enough. You're like, I'm just right close here.
Yeah. Like, so it satisfies everyone.
Yeah. Keep the family happy.
I did that, but it was mostly a lot of programming, which I liked. You know, I was a huge nerd, so, and also I was super competitive. So it was just a bunch of guys, again, in the faculty, and I would just study 3-4 years ahead of me just to make some money. Also, like, I was the scholarship kid. We weren't, like, super well off. My mom was a lawyer, but, you know, she was a single mom, so we were, like, paying for everything. She's paying for everything. So I had to grow up with a lot of scholarships, and I would basically take these students who are like 3-4 years ahead of me, and then I would do their homeworks for money. That's how I learned a lot of my programming stuff.
And also, like, your abilities to quote and have, like, a rate and everything. I'm sure that helped you later
in
life.
Very excited.
Yeah, the value of money.
She says, do you love money? I don't know where you get that from. But I think it's a good quality to have. Because you can still, you know, have good morals, but understand that, like, there's an exchange for what you're doing. I definitely understood that from a young age, especially, like, you know, being a scholarship kid. Like, okay, what can I do to bring kind of value and have any money in my pocket? I went up to my instructor and said, you know, this is way too scientific and technical for me. I wanted to, like, explore something more. And, you know, like, maybe machine learning or any kind of, like, those AI stuff and just move into the, like, graphics. And my instructor, he was, he used to work at Microsoft, so he was definitely, like, a luck to have. He wrote me a recommendation letter. I didn't know what to do with that, really. I was trying to change. I was trying to change my major into more, you know, the computer graphics and, like, machine learning and feeding that. It was super new at the time. They wouldn't let me transfer it because apparently I was keeping, as the scholarship kid, keeping the grades up for the science faculty. So they were like, no, you know, stay where you are.
The downside of getting really good grades. That's so unfair.
So I am at a cafe with my friend and I'm bawling my eyes out. Like, I don't know what to do with my life, man. I don't want to just, you know, write Python or C++. I need an alternative solution. I said that. We paid our bill and then we're leaving the cafe and I see this huge sign literally across the... I said, I need a sign. I need an alternative solution. And there's like a huge table across the board and it says... alternative international education. I was like, that's weird. I just think that worked. We went in there and I said, this is a sign. Like, what do you guys do here? And they said, you know, we get scholarships to kids to America if they're good. I said, I have recommendations and I have this and that. Like, can you do something for me? And they looked at it and they looked at my grades and recommendations and everything. And they're like, sure, we'll ship you off to Texas, to Texas A&M for computer science again. But I heard that in America, it was a lot easier to kind of change your mind and get, you know, supplementing courses. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's how I started my journey. I packed my stuff at 18. And wow. Like the day I turned 18, I was flying to Texas. I thought that I would always go back to Turkey after finishing and, like, kind of bring everything that I've learned here over there. But ever since I left, there was basically no visual effects industry when I left. But now there's a bunch happening over there. And it's just more democratized right now. It's all over the world. Mm. And it's the Hollywood is not the epicenter of it. You know, like, first Canada came and then England and now Atlanta. Like, everywhere is basically... being used, just depending on their, like, tax breaks and everything. But yeah, I've been here ever since, and I've changed my mind about computer science. I basically said, okay, I'm gonna go into film studies, and that's what I did. I transferred everything to film studies and moved to California after 2 years in Texas. And I wasn't sure like what to do with my programming skills and, you know, all this film stories, Kubrick love that I had. Yeah. And what I decided is to, you know, the movies that I was watching here, obviously it was technologically incredible, like stuff like Avatar, you know, like 3D technology was advancing. And mm-hmm. I just figured, okay, I look up who worked in these movies and what kind of schools they went to. And this is before LinkedIn was a huge thing, but I would go into the websites of Disney or, you know, like ILM or Weta just to see like who they hired. And I saw that these people were coming from some place called Academy of Art University, mostly in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And that's how I found my school. And this is one of the biggest advice that I give to people who are starting out is just to reverse search, like where you want to be. It might change, but where you want to be and like what kind of people do they need with what kind of skills, who mm-hmm. they are hiring, and then just kind of reverse copy their steps maybe. Like it's a good yeah. starting point.
I think that's really, really good advice for anyone trying to get into the industry. And yeah, like looking up also who are they hiring, not just where do they come from, but also what skills are they even looking for now? You know, making sure that you're learning relevant things.
There might be someone who's not even gone to school. I've run into people like that or like have taken 1 or 2 year courses versus me like changing 5 different educational systems and graduating from weirdly unnecessary degrees, but they just kind of have the skills needed. And this is the kind of environment where if you're good at it and if you have your own self-discipline, then your degree doesn't really matter that much, in the sense that it only matters because of the network and connections and the discipline, mm-hmm. like the learning discipline and having accountability of, you know, if you're stuck somewhere, then you have that support system to help you out. I definitely needed school because I'm the kind of person, you know, I just know myself. I work better with an environment that supports me and, you know, holds me accountable and gives me network. I always think that going to school is still very valuable, even during pandemic, if you're doing it online, just because it's really hard. Like you can be watching tutorials online, but not having that person or people or the peers to kind of reach out with and have that connection, most of your skills grow from that. There's some people out there, like very few outliers I met that, you know, learned everything on their own. They just put something together really cool and then they happen to get hired at one point. But mm-hmm. I think that's a really rough road to follow.
Yeah, and I feel like it's one that I used to see more often. Like when I was starting mm-hmm. out, a lot of people in, you know, in advertising or in visual effects, like they're like, yeah, I just kind of learned on my own and I figured it out. But I feel like that's becoming less and less common because there's just so much stuff out there to learn. Yeah. And like there's so many different softwares now. There's so many. And I think the biggest difference that I've noticed since the time that I was a student, it's like, you know, I'm not that old. We did have internet, but I feel like there was less helpful content and tutorials, or maybe I just didn't know yeah. where to look, but I feel like YouTube at that time, you know, wasn't, 10 or 15 yeah. years ago was more like funny videos and like, you know,
yeah.
stuff like that. It was less like helpful, but now there's so much content, like every single software, every tool, there's like someone out there making yeah. something to help you, which is a good thing, but also I think a bad thing in the sense that there's too much. It's like overwhelming yeah. to know which video is the right one, which one's good,
yeah.
which is going to teach you something actually useful. Because I think what yeah. you mentioned earlier is true. Like you have to find relevant people and relevant skills. Like just learning 3D in one kind of way might not guarantee you a job in this area.
You might get a job, but you'll probably most likely fail. After yeah. all those years of school, I went to, yeah. not to scare anyone, but I went to, you know, like I dedicated the third part of my education after all this, like, you know, software stuff, visual effects, and I learned a bunch of stuff. And really, I was top of my class when I graduated. I was like, I know everything, you know,
yeah.
they're going to hire me and I'm done. Like I went to my first job and they gave me an assignment And I was so confused because I've never had to deal with anything so complicated before. Mm-hmm. You know, real life work situations, they're less than ideal. So when you're learning, obviously you're going to learn with a little bit more curated stuff, which is important, you know, to have that. But then when you're thrown out into the real world, that's kind of where your first actual learning experience and applying that experience and like your people skills come in handy. Doesn't mean that just because you start a job and you don't know something, you're not qualified for it. But I think it means that you need to like keep pushing hard where you are at, and you can always bring some value because you have some sort of an education, right? And this is going to happen. This is expected when you take your job. You're going to get a little flustered and confused because A, it's a different pipeline. B, it's a whole new set of people and like culture. How they approach problems is going to be vastly different than any other place that you're going to work at next. So just understand that knowing nothing and knowing not everything is completely normal. And even after 10, 15 years, 20 years, we're still feeling the same way every time we start a new job. We just, you know, a little less nervous because we've been through this roller coaster like so many times. But all you got to do is just basically ask questions and just kind of put in that time, pay your dues in that way, put in that time to understand what you can be doing, because you're not just doing that for the company's sake to bring value, but you're doing it for yourself. Because you're surrounded by these people, whether it's online or in person, that you can grab from. Even if you're going to get fired from that job, you're going to find another one. And like, just make sure that you suck that information in from everybody.
No one is expecting you to be like a superstar anyway, you know? And it's like, it's all about communication, like you said. I think that's what differentiates more senior people than juniors in like a new job is the senior ones. It's not that they know everything. They just know, oh, there is a learning curve and I will get there. Yeah. I just need to put in the time to like figure out whether it's a new TV show and there's a different client or something, or it's just a whole new company altogether. And there's like different pipeline, different people. Maybe they manage their shows differently or something. There's this paperwork you have to do. Oh, okay, cool.
They even use different techniques inside the same software. You know, like you'll go to one studio and then they would be such a stickler doing something this way. And then they'll be telling you like doing it the other way is wrong. Mm-hmm. And some studios will be like, do however you want. I don't care. Just give me a result. Yeah. And the other studio will say, the complete opposite of what the first studio said, and they're like, no, doing it that way is wrong and we're doing it this way. But everybody has their reasons, you know, like their pipeline and their money and what they can like put together. It works in a certain way.
Or they have a tool. They're like, actually, we made this, and so you don't even have to do that anymore because we made a tool to do it for you.
Exactly. And then you get so used to that, and then you're like forgetting all the hard work that you've done on the other studio, like putting it manually together. That's normal. I would just say, like, also the most important thing is don't feel bad about yourself, because I think everybody to a point is just, even no matter how senior they are, we get lost. Everybody gets lost, especially with the pandemic. Just reach out. And if you're ever being made like feel bad about reaching out or asking too many questions, just know that this is not the company for you. And there's going to be companies out there that really appreciates like growing people from like here to here. And that's what they love doing. And they give their own trainings. So definitely there's going to be a place. It's not because you're a bad artist. It's not because you know, shame on you. You didn't know this. You're doing your best. How are you going to know if you can do the job or not, if you don't get it? If it doesn't work out, it will work out somewhere else, especially right now.
Yeah, so do you think that there is a big shift? Like you said earlier, when you started, the VFX industry didn't feel very big. But obviously that's changed. I mean, I felt the same way too. I used to think that, oh, movies are made in Hollywood and not Toronto. Yeah. Nothing happens in Toronto, Canada, which is now hilarious because I know so many people who are like itching to come here, you know? Yeah. So, do you think that there's a difference now, and like what kind of advice could you give to people starting in the industry, aside from, like you said, if it's not like the right place for you, there's something else. Yeah. What do you think has changed? And what's your advice for people with like the new industry now with more opportunities, apparently?
I think the biggest hurdle that you know, the new people are going to run into is necessarily not being in a studio environment. I'm sitting next to my bed and my bed is not giving me any tips other than stop what you're doing and come to bed.
Take a break. Relax a little.
You still need that support system. And it's going to be harder for you to get that when everything is online, because you're not sitting someone and you can't really annoy them. You know, I used to do that. I'm like, oh, what are you doing over there? What kind of technique is this? And then, you know, the guy I'm sitting next to would be annoyed for a little bit, but then he'd be like, okay, fine, I'll explain it to you. And then I would have something new in my toolbox. So how you can do that is basically just, you know, don't be shy and like reach out to people and introduce yourself, slide into their DMs. That's the way to do it online, and just introduce yourself and say that like you're here to help and you would hope that like we can learn something from each other, because no matter how junior you are, you at least know one thing that 20-year senior person doesn't know, even if they're supervisor. Like you can give some value, because there's no way that everybody's gonna know everything. People actually like it when you reach out to them, and even if you become like online friends. If there's anyone working in your city, in the same city as you, try to meet up with them outside in real life, whatever your comfort level is with COVID. Apply to other kind of networks, whether it be VES or whatever, like the Animation Guild. Or one of my best friends, she's working at Pixar for many years. Mm-hmm. She's top of her line, but she's still applying to these grants and mentorships, because you know, from by her like favorite directors, and I think that's very admirable, because you know, she's still saying that I'm on the top of the industry, but I really can learn a lot more from this person. Even the, you know, mentors are like, why are you here? she still texts us, because she just likes to have that relationship and see, like, it's an opportunity to see how someone she adores or inspires her works and what kind of advice I can give her. I think just keeping those kind of relationships, like if you're at CG Spectrum, it's great. Like keep your relationships with your instructors, like add your fellow students on LinkedIn and try to make projects with them. Try to keep in touch with them. Not because, oh, network and schmooze just to get a job. Like that never works. If you're sincere and if you're sincere about like keeping in touch and learning, like most people in our industry are amazing, and they'll actually like get excited that you're excited about this.
Hey everyone, we're quickly interrupting this episode to tell you about a great resource, CG Spectrum's Career Pathways.
The entertainment industry is full of exciting opportunities to let your creativity run wild. Choose your field of interest from animation to 3D modeling, digital painting, game development, visual effects, and virtual production. And on our website, explore the different career paths available to you. Once you've set your sights on your dream job, we'll help you get there with our expert career training and mentorship from an industry pro. Learn more at cgspectrum.com/career-pathways. We're bringing the industry to you.
Like, networking isn't about someone giving you jobs. It's like, that's not it at all. It's about like actually trying to make real connections with people about things that you care about, you know, and connecting with people that are in like finding some kind of commonality, you know. And I think location is a big one, because that's something that makes it easier to connect in the same time zone. You know, you can actually meet up in person. Personal connections help a lot. Like actually meeting someone in person is a big deal. But even if you're online and you know, are somewhere more remote, you know, or there isn't like a big city or studio, you're like, you know, in some small town, there's still ways to connect with people online, like common values, things that you're interested in, things that you're passionate about, Stanley Kubrick movies, whatever. But just finding that, like something to be excited that you can help each other with.
If you're in a small town, which happens with, you know, COVID, like people are moved away and they're with their parents or they're somewhere cheaper that makes sense to them, which, you know, I'll be in that position too. There's not much movie industry happening on its own in Vancouver, Washington, but what I'm excited about is I already found out like some film societies. It's not necessarily a visual effects thing, but there's like game companies. I'm like, okay, these are my people. They're still my people. I'm just going to find these like small little studios and introduce myself. That's my plan. Like starting from zero, like attack their LinkedIn or just kind of drop by and ask about, like there's a virtual production studio in Portland that I found and you know, they're not as big as an LA studio, so I'm hoping I'll go in there, introduce myself, saying like, hey, you guys got a LA shipment in here, and can I help with any way, and can I learn from you guys? And I'm sure, like, at one point, someone is going to be interested in just kind of in that, like, wisdom exchange. And when you do that, usually a lot of good friendships come from that. Most of my old coworkers, not my best friends. You just share so much together. You help each other grow. And then the networking happens naturally. But don't ever push it in a way that, like, you are trying to, like, get something from the situation. Like, you haven't seen someone in 10 years and then you only reach out to them because of a job. If there's no ulterior motive, like, that vibe is going to get to that person. And you're just wanting to, like, make friends, make a connection and learn from them. And you adore what they're doing, like, and then they can learn something from you. If not today, you know, like in 10 years, that's how it works.
Tell me a little bit more about how you got into being a real-time look development artist, real-time director. You've made some short films as well. So how did you go from being a compositing artist and then compositing supervisor to being on this kind of like new frontier of virtual production and real-time 3D? How did that happen for you? And did your programming background help you at all?
Yes, it definitely did.
Because you said earlier it was like useless education. I was like, I don't know if that was useless, like those courses, even if you switched.
Seemingly. Yeah. I would suggest that everyone, even if you're in games or music videos or you're just a producer, I'm saying you're just a producer, you're not really like wanting to learn, you know, programming because you don't see the usefulness of it. I think you should just a little bit, just to get the understanding of like how everything around you in this world today works. Especially, I think if you're like in the management level, not necessarily doing the technical stuff, I think it's good for you to still kind of learn like all the terminology and like what people are working with, because you are essentially organizing these artists' technical or creative working with you. It really helps that you understand a little bit of what they're talking about, what their problems are going to be. And like when you're talking to a client, then you understand it from a creative's point of view. That communication is really, again, important. But how I came from that, basically using that same technique, you know, I was interested in a lot of different aspects, like Houdini was my first interest. And then I really fell in love with compositing because it just kind of combined my programming skills like Python, C++, all of that in like the softwares that I used, and just my eye for and my love for like the general frame, like the picture and the final pixel, like how to put everything together. I didn't want to just be a 3D artist because then I don't really have any control over how everything goes together. I felt like being a compositor was, you know, that maestro in the orchestra, like you just kind of put it all the instruments together. And that was beautiful to me. And I was really good at, you know, like depth and color theory of it. But that helped that, you know, I had the programming part of it so that I could just go into the program and like create tools for myself. That's where it helps. I have coworkers that are amazing and they don't even know one word of Python, which is fine. Like that's kind of how they approach their art and they do look that. For me, I still keep that side of me a little bit because I like solving problems, then I don't want to like do it by hand, and I like automating things. And then I like handing it off to people I work with so that they don't have to constantly go into the other directory and get something. But like it automatically, I wrote some little nugget of programming that they can just kind of bring something in. But also I understand how softwares work better. Like I'm not just in the complete user side of a software. I get how it's trying to, in what order. Again, this is why it's useful to kind of understand the algorithms and how it works, basically, because if I'm trying to make Unreal do something for me, and if it's not doing it, okay, like, how does the engine work? What's the mentality behind this? Okay, so basically it's triggering events every second, but if I change it to this and, like, force it to genlock and do this, then this is going to work this way. And then I might not know how to do that in C++, but I get that order of the algorithm, and then I find somebody else who does it or find a tutorial or whatever.
It is frustrating when you are learning and you're like, oh, the software is doing this, the software is messing it up or something, but it's like it still relies on your input. If you're not inputting it correctly the way that, you know, the simple program or device understands, or even like you said, like just understanding the way that it computes the information, you know, the order in which things go through, that can help you. But yeah, it still very much is like you inputting something into the system. Yeah.
Exactly. You're basically the master of it if you know what it's trying to do for you. Otherwise, it's the master of you. And you're in for a very frustrating ride. Because I was a person, basically, going back to your question, that's kind of always wanting to communicate with the other departments and knowing like the CG side a little bit more than most compositors were interested in, and the programming side, I just kind of kept in touch with my lighters, my, you know, supervisors, the people who go on set, because I think it's a whole picture. So I would just insert myself in those situations. If there's a training going on about Unreal, what is a compositing person going to do, like someone from compositing department in the Unreal training? I didn't care. I was just like, this is the future. I'm going into this training. If there's, you know, like they're learning a new tool, I would sit next to the lighters and kind of learn Katana and like what they're doing, because it's important to me to understand what my lighter working with, so that I can, you know, like be literate in that sense. But that led me into becoming even more and more interested in the whole picture rather than just like, and that's the reason why I first went into compositing, because I thought that it was seeing the whole bigger picture than being in a lighting department or a texture department. But it kind of evolved when Unreal started to be used for movies more rather than just games and live action, like broadcasting and all that. I applied for the fellowship in, I think, 2018 or 19, the first round of fellowships.
And yeah, it was like the Epic Games Unreal Fellowship. Yeah.
It was awesome. Like, you know, they paid you to learn it because you had to take time off from work and you had to dedicate yourself like 6 to 8 weeks or something like this to completely to that program. So they were like, we'll pay you to learn, which I think is amazing what they're doing. They're democratizing, and this is the best way to advertise. It's very smart. The more you teach how awesome your program is to other people, the more they're going to carry that information back to their studios. So I applied, you know, thinking I'm probably not going to get in because there was like thousands of people in the line, and there's like some famous directors or editors and huge 3D artists that did like huge 3D concepts and stuff before in their life. And they picked this like interesting compositor. You know, there were maybe 100 people they selected out of those thousands. And I think only five compositors, something like that. The rest of it was more, you know, higher up or just, you know, very 3D programming
more
oriented
or CG
people.
Yeah,
but I really suggest that, like, no matter where you are in the pipeline, just definitely learn Unreal, even as a producer or the production side. Just kind of like take a look at what it's all about, because it's definitely taken the industry by storm. and it was one of the best decisions that I've ever done. Like, we were working at Spider-Man, doing Spider-Man movie at the time I left. And I was an important part of it because I was looked at developing like a bunch of stuff that all the studios around the world was using. And, you know, what we were doing at that studio was very, very important in the sense of movies, because we got an Australian Oscar for those designs that we all did together for Spider-Man. But I was just like kind of in the middle of it, like, I'm let's finish up because I'm going. I totally got selected for this and I'm going. And it was just between doing a lot of like overtime and being needed in what you already know, versus, okay, you're going on a wild journey like a hobbit and you don't know what the outcome is gonna be. So I just went there and again made connections, and it was completely online. And these people that I met, they still to this day I work with. They're amazing. They're awesome. They shoot me jobs because they're busy. They don't want to do it themselves. And again, the connection was never because, oh, maybe he'll give me a job later on, or she'll, you know, reach out to the studio for me. It's literally because I adored the work they did. And I'm just a little fangirl for, you know, everybody I meet. And it's quite like interesting and inspiring to me to see everybody else's work. So again, that network just kind of kept pushing a lot of Unreal related stuff to me. By the same time, I was, you know, rising the ranks of going on set, doing visual effects supervisor, and like, you know, look dev soup and compositing soup, like doing all that. Like, I was rising up in the original path that I created for myself for those many years, but my heart was like constantly curious about the other stuff that's happening. So now I'm just kind of an enmeshment of this world of, you know, storytelling through Unreal and virtual production, versus like what I know traditionally, which makes me interesting to studios.
Well, I think that like that's kind of the one thing I notice about a lot of some of the most interesting people in this industry and some of the most groundbreaking people in this industry is they're combining worlds or fields or talents that maybe weren't traditionally combined, or, you know, it feels like two paths, but really when you look back at it from the other side, you're like, oh, actually it does all kind of make sense. Sometimes you feel like you don't know what the heck you're doing in the moment. Like, if you told yourself 10 years ago, like when you're crying, or maybe it was more than 10 years ago, but when you're like crying to your friend about, you know, oh, I'm stuck in computer science.
Like 16 years ago.
Yeah. Still not that long ago. No, but still just that kind of feeling of like feeling stuck. You know, and I talk to a lot of students that feel the same way. They're like stuck in one area, or they're trying to get out of something and into something else. And it's good to switch things up. You know, it's good that you did find that sign. And like you're able to study film in the end. But, you know, you said so yourself, even the stuff that you thought was, you know, useless or like, you know, not your passion before still ended up helping you. Because I feel like, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what it sounded like, even as a compositor, the fact that you were able to build tools and not just focus solely on the visual, but also have like a supporting role, it seemed like that helped you move up. Like, is that true? Like, do you feel definitely. Like you had more opportunities because of that background and because you were curious about how the program works and not just using it for the result, the final pixel?
Definitely, because I think what makes a good leader is not, and you'll run into this, like some of your leaders or supervisors unfortunately will be people who are really good at what they do and they have a good eye, but they don't know how to support you. They're basically on that management role because they were the best at doing it. And then you'll have other people who are, and you'll run into these people sometimes, it's rare, but you will. They're very, very much about, you know, they take that leadership position, but it's not about ego. Most of the time you'll run into these people, they don't even want to take this leadership position, but they're kind of forced into it because they're just naturally, they were really good with helping people without being asked for. Like, it's kind of like in their nature what they're doing. They understand that if they can see someone's talents and, you know, how to like push them in the right direction so they're not frustrated and they understand it a little better, then it creates a better environment for these kinds of people, including myself, to like work in. Like, if my coworkers are happy and they're doing faster work, they're going to stay with me at the company and we're going to, you know, continue building really important stuff. And it just makes you feel, in a sense, you contributed to the general, you know, sense of wellness in the company. If you can help them make their better day better a little bit, like by making it easier, by whatever tools you figure it out. And don't let ego get into this. It's mostly basically about giving back to community you're working with. Then it comes in tenfold because you find yourself in situations where you're like, okay, she's a, you know, people's person. Even if a client yells, she knows how to compose herself. She doesn't take it personally. And she rather like throw herself under the bus than like throw her coworkers under the bus. Like this kind of qualities where you're like sticking up for the people you work with because you see them or you work with them, like interact with them more than your family sometimes. You make them, while keeping your boundaries, you make them some sort of a important part of your life and you show that respect and you take those steps for them. I think it comes back to you naturally in the sense that like, yeah, okay, but I want Azra to talk in our behalf because she, you know, never throws us under the bus and she always explains our side. And I'm a huge advocate for all the artists. When most of the time I work with people, they don't want to say anything about it because they're very afraid of getting in trouble or getting fired or, you know, confronting anything. I think that the management should be given a chance to understand what the struggle here is, because if they don't know, you can't really blame them for not being able to, you know, nobody's a mind reader. So that's where like also people skills come in, just being able to advocate for yourself, not stirring up the environment, but doing it so that like you bring a better working situation for you and your coworkers. I derived so much from your question, but
that's good. It's a good answer. And I think like it covered so many things. It almost kind of brings it back to the thing we talked about at the beginning where there's always going to be something else. Like, I think there is a fine line between, you know, being helpful, being useful, being someone who understands the process, being open to learning new things. Like, yes, so much of this job, I think, is on the individual. But at the end of the day, we can't actually control everything. And, you know, sometimes, like you said before, you might have a manager that, you know, is less supportive or understanding or there to help you. And, you know, there are options, you know, you can give so much, but at the end of the day, it's still a business. It's still, these are still companies and there are probably going to be other ones. You know, we're all still human. And I think it is so important to, like you said, know your boundaries and understand your like mental health, what you're able to give, physical health.
Yeah. 100%.
Because if you can't like function or if you don't feel supported, obviously you're still going to have hard days. I think even in the best case scenario, there's still going to be difficult weeks, hard projects, difficult clients, small budgets, not enough time. Yeah. I think like every single person I talk to, nobody ever has all the time that they would like to have on any project ever. The work is still work. Like that's why they have to pay us to do this because no one's going to do this just for fun. Like the passion is one element of it that I think helps you
cultivate it.
Yeah. And I think like it helps making the burden of, you know, learning things easier.
Yeah.
If you're enjoying it, but like, that's kind of where it ends. Like it's still a business at the end of the day. Passion helps you get like part of the way and helps you like meet people and be excited and
yeah.
want to learn stuff.
Continuing and like,
yeah.
Because if you don't, honestly, I don't think that I've met a lot of people who hate the side of this business and then still continue, because partially they might get a little jaded. That's what happens in our industry, but partially they get jaded because they never really learn how to put up their boundaries. And then they kind of flip to the other side and said, okay, this is it. You know, all companies are evil and all management is evil. This is not my project. And so, you know, you get what you get. And sorry, buddy, there's another company that will hire me. Which they're not wrong, honestly. But I think
that they're just so sad to be so cynical.
I know, it's sad for you. It's sad for you. Yeah. The company will survive and you're still doing like a good job for them. But why would I spend 8 to 12 hours of my day doing something that I really personally don't care about? Generally, I care for the good of the company. I care for the good of the project. And it's, I don't view it as it's somebody else's project, because I'm like, come on, like it's my sweat and tears. So it just, you it's easier to get into the flow of working. Flow is described as this thing where you're like playing drums or rock climbing or doing something where you're just in that moment and flowing, and you're literally only thinking about doing that thing in front of you, and you're not thinking about the bills you haven't paid and the fight you had with your husband and you know, like this nasty thing your one of your girlfriends said to you. You're just, you haven't, and there's sometimes like 4 hours I've been staring at a problem that I forgot to go to the restroom, because it's like how much I'm in the flow. I don't even realize, which is not good. That's why I have an Apple Watch now that tells me, okay, time to stand up. That 8 hours becomes really easy for me after that, because I'm not forcing myself to sit there for 90% of my days. And that's all you can ask for. Like you're spending more than half your life doing this. It's just kind of a more respectful thing to do for yourself, to find something that will put you in that flow. But, you know, there's times that you don't take showers, you don't have enough time to clean your apartment or buy groceries. Like, that's when you say, okay, you know what? Nothing is more important than my health. At the end of the day, this is just a game. This is just a movie. This is just a TV show. Life comes first. I need to move and I need to use the restroom and I need to wash my hair. Because at the end of the day, it is someone making bajillions of money and what you, I, you know, ruined my wrists working overtime. The first time I worked so much overtime, it was like days and days and days after, like we didn't have any groceries. We were getting fatter because we were just being fed pizza and stuff like that. I had to take off 2 months off from work because I couldn't feel anything in my...
Yeah, like really bad carpal tunnel. Yeah.
At a very
young age. I had it really bad at one point.
And I still have to use one of these. I mean, nothing is
worse. Oh, wait, I have one too?
Nothing is worse losing your health and losing your mental health. It's not just physical. I get that the production might need that. But you, it's up to you to kind of speak up for yourself and say, I can't take this shot. I'm mentally overwhelmed. If there's anyone else who's willing to do it, great. Because people are in different conditions. Maybe you have kids and you have to deal with them. Whatever. Maybe you have, God forbid, cancer and you have to deal with them. Or maybe, just maybe, you don't want to do it anymore because... for whatever reason, you need that break.
Maybe you just need a break. Like, you don't always need this external reason. I think that was one thing that I realized later in life is I used, like, growing up, I used to always think that there needed to be some, like, life or death excuse or, like, something big. Like, because I think it is true. It's hard for students and I think people trying to get into the industry to, like, understand the difference. Like, because we're telling them, like, you got to have passion, you got to have this, you got to work hard, you got to network, like, oh my God. And then they finally get something and you're terrified to lose it, you know? And so you get taken advantage of, A lot of companies, whether they like to admit it or not, and this is across industries from games, film, and it's not just in the creative industries. I think like banks do this too. Like they make you feel guilty. That's one sneaky thing in our industry. Yeah. I think the way that they take advantage of people is by making them feel guilty about the passion. It's like, well, don't you want this? Like, don't you love filmmaking? Don't you love making movies? We're making movies here. Like, you know, but the reality is that, especially at those really big studios, you're still one of thousands or hundreds or, you know, and
they will survive if you take time off.
Exactly.
They will survive.
They'll survive if they lay off half the staff.
I know.
They'll come back again the next movie and release something else and hire a bunch more people back, you know? Like they exactly. will survive.
There's one really, I love this saying. And it applies to everything in life. Sometimes I'll stand out. It's going to sound cheesy. I'll stand outside. This is why I love nature. I look at the stars at night and the sky and then like the vast oceans. And I remember my problems and everything people ever judged me for and everything that I was ever anxious for. Then I say, I'm nothing. My problems are nothing. I'm so small in this vast everything. And at the same time, I'm everything. Because I'm living life through my lens. And there is validity to human.
And the fact
anxiety.
That you are there and exist. And
like
crazy.
This world also exists because, or the universe, I am observing it. So at the same time, I'm part of something really huge and I'm super important. But at the same time, I'm nothing, and none of these problems ever matter. Like, we're such a tiny drop in this huge ocean kind of a thing. Mm. So I think that applies for when you're doing your passion project, too. Like, this is not the end of the world. They're going to survive as long as you do it respectfully. Like, this is why interpersonal skills are so important at your job. You do it respectfully, still supporting. You can say no to someone by still supporting them and finding ways to help them and not just shutting down and being rude about it. That really shows you care, but you just can't do it. And people are going to respect that. They have to, because you're a commodity. Don't forget that. You bring value on the table just by showing up and trying to do your job. Doesn't matter what level you are. So don't give up on things that make you as a human being able to live, like your rate, your mental sanity, your work-life balance. And there's going to be some negotiable areas sometimes here and there, but make sure that you're a comfortably living human being. And you know, like my first 3 years in the industry, I was living on my best friend's couch from IKEA that literally ruined my back for many years because I couldn't afford anything with the salary I had. And, you know, was just kind of thinking like, this is what I have to do to learn from like the best, which there's some truth to it. Like, but at the same time, you go to all these schools, you are smart. You know, you have this like huge talent and you have these skills that you honed in. You're just getting more experience, but it should be worth something. It should be worth more than working at Starbucks. It should be worth more than, you know, and not to say that they're not doing, but you should be able to make a comfortably living wage and maybe hold off on becoming rich yet. But you can get there. You can get there. You know, like, why not? People are making billions out of this business. Like, figure out a creative way to get there. But I think no one should negotiate on a wage where they can't even live with it. If you keep lowering your rates, when people are actually making a lot of money from this, guess what? The studio is going to have to raise their rate against the client. You help raise the market value for everyone. For everyone. You help everyone. I don't care a huge studio makes 5 $1 billion out of a movie, and then now they have to spend $500 million more on the visual effects studios because the people are making happy wages. They're still making $4 billion. So relax and trust. Relax and trust and make a livable wage. Put your boundaries up. You're helping the person who's sitting next to you. You're helping the person who's connecting from Alabama get livable wages. You're helping make a better work environment. You're helping the visual effects studio get treated better and have to ask for same thing for their rights and for what they deserve from the clients.
Well, I like this thinking of, okay, it's almost like playing their game with them. It's like, okay, if I'm just a number, okay, cool. I'll play a game. Like, I am a commodity then. So I must be worth something to you if I am just a number. And trying to use that instead of have it just be used against you all the time. But it is tough. It's something that, it's a skill you have to practice, I think, with communication. It's not something that comes naturally. Being able to negotiate or being able to talk to people about your worth, it's not something that you're going to just like wake up and be good at. One thing you talked about earlier was, encountering people, maybe it's supervisors or clients that, you said are like belittling you or making you not feel worthy of your art or you're not good enough. What is the difference between... Because we still are in this, any creative industry has a lot of feedback involved. We have critiques, we have reviews, we have notes. So what is the difference between a helpful critique versus someone just being mean to you? And then as a supervisor, how do you give feedback that's helpful and not like belittling to someone in those scenarios?
That's really great question. I think that it's basically, first of all, it's a vibe from that human being you're getting, in the sense that I have supervisors that mansplain a lot, for instance, and that could be belittling on its own sense. Don't assume the person doesn't know what they're talking about. It's kind of like going to a surgeon for your surgery and saying that you should do it this way. Well, I'm your doctor. Like, calm down. I have been in this.
You hired me to do this. I'm doing it.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing. And obviously, like, you can give me feedback on what your wish is, but don't micromanage. If you feel like you're being micromanaged, and then there's no like specific good reason, don't put that program or node in here because it causes a crash in the pipeline. That's acceptable micromanaging, because at the end of the day, they know something about the pipeline or the client that you weren't there for, and that's good communication. So don't have a huge ego when you're getting these kinds of feedbacks. Like, again, you can learn something from everybody. Just approach it in a way that they're just trying to help me, even if you don't get that vibe, for your sake. But the difference between that of a good advice and that of a condescending one is that the person respects you. No matter how junior you are, they say, hey, do you mind if I give you an advice? This is how I approach. You don't have to take it, but I find that it helps me when I do this, this, and this. And if you already know this, apologies. I just wanted to make sure you're doing okay and you're fine. And I always approach it that they might know it already, or there might be a reason why they don't use it in that sense. Like, you know your script better, you know your project better the most, because you're the person who's doing that surgery. Have you thought about doing this? What were your reasons for not doing it? You know the best. Doesn't matter how junior that person is, because that's the truth. This person is working on this part of the project for whatever months. And just because you had a brilliant idea doesn't mean that they haven't thought about that already and it didn't work out. So make it a discussion of equals. Supervisor is just your title. Supervisor doesn't grant you the right to be better than everyone. If anything, you're there to serve everybody. That's why you're a leader. You're a servant to your people. That's how it works. Like, you do what's best for them, that's why you're in a leadership position. You observe what they're good at and raise them up. You know, if you feel like the approach is raising you up, then it's good. It's good advice.
Before we finish today, I do have some listener questions. So my first question.
My supervisor saying, why are you not at work?
If this was live, probably.
Don't say which day it is. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. My first question. How do you stay on the cutting edge with learning software when you know so many?
First of all, don't feel bad when you're forgetting something, because it happens to everyone. And don't feel frustrated that there's like 100 different softwares out there. There's still so many that's coming out every day with the new technology. But what you need to look at is basically, okay, what are movies being made with? What are games are being made with? Like, is it more so Unity, for instance, or Unreal Engine? Is it more so After Effects or Nuke? Like, what is the industry standard? Because be sure that if you learn that industry standard one, that's how you eliminate from having to learn like 100 different ones, right? Like for effects, is it Maya, 3ds Max, or Houdini? I would say more Houdini, right? If you learn those industry standard ones, even if they're using a different software, it's okay. Most of the time, you're still going to get hired and get a training on that. You learn at the job. And if you're if you used to be good at one software and you're not anymore, that's okay too, because you're going to remember how it works. It's basically like riding a bike. But the best way to kind of keep relevant with it, play around on your own time. Play around. I know that it's asking for too much after you take a look at your computer 10 hours for working. But this is the kind of passion I'm talking about that will always keep you at the cutting edge, is that you're reading articles and you're subscribed to, you know, like this kind of magazines that talk about like what software they use. What are they trying? Like, be curious about that. Be curious, and you don't have to do a whole production. But I spend this is too much for everyone, but I spend 1 or 2 hours every day just reading about like Unreal and what's happening. Maybe I just put a podcast of people talking about stuff in the while I'm like automatically working and not really thinking too much. You're just kind of keeping in the loop. And sometimes I'll get really excited and then I'll be like, okay, after work today, I'm just going to make a scene that uses this Niagara particles and Houdini and this and that. And then I'll get really frustrated about it. And I'll ask people at work, like, how did you do that? And did you do this? So it's like learning environment still continues. That's how you stay on top of it. And if a studio that you're working at for a long time just doesn't want to change their pipeline or implement anything new, they might have their reasons. But it's time for you to then just kind of jump ship at least for a little bit to find studios that use this, because the reality of it is that you're going to forget if you're never using it.
One of our students asks, what can I do to keep a creative mindset when thinking about using softwares for new applications, like how you're aware that you would be using Unreal for filmmaking?
Okay, I think that the first part of that starts with, again, getting inspired by seeing what other people do, right? Do your research, kind of. I look at like Unreal short films when people weren't really using Unreal too much for either virtual production or short movies. I had a few people that I found randomly. This is why the internet is good. You just kind of find that reference and you get so excited. Holy hell, like how did they do this? This looks so realistic. Then you start researching that. Basically, you're making a lookbook for yourself. Kind of think of yourself as a photographer. Make sure you get a book of things inspire you. And if you can't find a particular way to use a software, challenge yourself in a way that find a movie you like, find a game you like. For instance, get Death Stranding in PlayStation or PC, like Visual Stunnings, and you really are a huge fan of that game, or The Last of Us or something. Take a scene from that. You know, you can even recreate that scene in MS-DOS Paint. If people can do that in Paint, I see this on Reddit every day. Reddit is a good area as well to get inspired. People the stuff people do with AI even is inspiring. It's like really cool. There's a bunch of AI programs that you kind of put in a prompt and it gives you a hilarious image.
I saw one this morning of like Larry David and David Lynch or something. And it was like someone put in the prompt of like couples photo shoot of Larry David and David Lynch. And it was like these really twisted faces, but it was like them, but not really them because obviously they've never had this photo shoot done. Sorry, that was off topic.
No, it's on topic. It's hilarious, but also you can use those prompts to just kind of create a concept like a tiki space station. I don't know. I just made that up, but it's probably going to give me something that I can then take it to Nuke, Maya, Unreal, whatever I'm using. It doesn't matter what you're using. You find a way to do it, you know, even if it's like Photoshop or MS-DOS Paint. Your first and foremost job is to systematically keep yourself inspired. Because no matter how jaded you are and how clueless you are, trust me, we all get to those points. It's like a writer's block. There's always a TV show or a song or something that inspires you or like you can't get out of your mind or you say like, that was so well done. Art is imitation of real life and other people's projects. So you're going to combine some things that, you know, you saw and that inspired you. And it's going to be so exciting to work on that because it's almost like fan art in a sense. Mm-hmm. Like you like that concept already. And then you're kind of studying the greats or the great things that were done before you. That's like such a good way to learn before you break any rules and like get really insane like Da Vinci on your own. You study the greats and you study how they do things. Like if you're lighting a scene, check out Lord of the Rings and like one scene that they've done from The Hobbit and like do that with, I don't care, with Legos, you know. But really get that feeling. It's going to get you going and it's going to like give you that energy to do it at home after work.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important note just to close this out is to separate the learning part of things with the portfolio and the showcase.
Yeah.
Like you can't be able to showcase something unique without taking the time to actually learn something. And that's why it's okay to like learn something with your passion and, you know, something like you said, fan art or, you know, being inspired by other people or doing tutorials. Like there's a lot of people selling tutorials now, like famous artists are selling. They're like, look, you can do it just like me for $8.99 or whatever, which is great. But then you still have to take that knowledge that you just learned, separate it from the research and development side, and then make something different with it. So I'm going to end this. Tell us, where can we find you? Are you online? I do know that you are one of the mentors at CG Spectrum. So if people are, you know, wanting to connect with you and learn from you, they can come to CG Spectrum. But where else can we find you, Azra?
I have my own website that I put up short movies and kind of the movies that I lately worked on and some tutorials. I think that would be the best place. And if there's someone who's outside of CG Spectrum that want to reach out to me because they have a question, I'm really bad at LinkedIn, but I try to go in just for like people who need help. Job offers are a little crazy on LinkedIn for everybody right now. But yeah, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn and I read all the messages and I especially get back to the ones that are people asking for help.
And if anyone also has any more questions after today's episode, please feel free to send them in to me or leave a comment. Awesome. Well, thank you so much and have a great rest of your day.
It's amazing.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. For more on this episode, visit us at cgspectrum.com/podcast. Check out our show notes where you'll find links to our guests and more behind the scenes. And if you're enjoying the show, please like, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening, or share this episode with someone who might like it. See you next time.